Hampton, chairman of Illinois Panther Party.
All power to the people. What we basically going to be talking about today, we're going to be talking about political prisoners, and we're going to be talking about what the pig is doing to the Panthers all around the country. We're going to specifically be talking about what the pigs are doing to the Black Panther Party right here in Chicago, Illinois. And also, we're going to have to talk about what are we going to have to do about the repression that they put on the Black Panther Party in order to get that repression off of the Black Panther Party. And we're not really worried about getting off of it. Let's try to deal with it.
Because you can jail a revolutionary, but you can't jail revolution. You can run a freedom fighter all around the country, but you can't run freedom fighting around the country. You can murder a liberator, but you can't murder liberation.
So when they speak about revolution, they must speak about a change, because we are human beings, and we got to be treated like human beings.
We are men. We are not beasts, and we do not intend to be beaten or driven as such.
If you put people under these kind of conditions, they're going to rebel, you know, and that's what Attica teaches you.
What has happened here is but the sound before the fury of those who are oppressed.
I think you've been able to see from all of the celebrating that has already taken place here what my reaction, the reaction of the members of my family, and all of the sisters and brothers who've been struggling for my freedom. This is the happiest day of my life. The real reason why I'm so happy now to have all of this out of the way so that I think can begin to give all I have to the struggle to free political prisoners and to the struggle to liberate all oppressed people.
These things must be exposed, man, because these are the things that at this time, man, that's causing this entire country, man, right now to be turned over like it is. You know what I mean? Once you can expose where these judges are in direct conspiracy with one another, and that they are just outright denying prisoners or persons illegally held in prison their rights to file documents, their rights to be here. Once this can be established, the facts can be clearly established and shown to the people where these dogs are practicing slavery under the color of law, then this automatically requires one thing, that is inspection, investigation by the people to look for themselves. They will find that these judges are criminals. You have to deal on your own tactics, the right tactics. I say, when I say tactics, I say like comply with that Declaration of Independence, whereas you have a right to take up arms, to oppose any usurped government, particularly the type of corruption government that we have today, man.
Saturday, August 21st, 1971.
Today at about 3 p.m., there was an attempted break from our adjustment center, which is our maximum security facility. George Jackson was killed as he broke and ran outside the adjustment center.
Well, I could die tomorrow, but there'll be 200 or 300 people to take my place.
This is one black man they're not going to murder and sweep under the rug, unless they murder me too.
Uhuru, sisters and brothers, the first thing I want to say is that I love you. And the second thing I want to say is that we can win. We will win our liberation. And in order to win our liberation, we have got to think positively. We have got to believe that we can win. And if we don't believe that we can win, we're whipped before we start. We've got to realize what dangers exist, and we've got to look at those dangers realistically. We can't afford to have a subjective, distorted, irrational fear. We've got to look at the obstacles to our liberation coolly and clearly, and to develop ways to get rid of those, for us to struggle, for us to fight for our liberation and for our nation.
Comrades and friends, our entire people from north to south, closely united, have raised up to defend their freedom and independence, and at the same time contribute to the cause of the peoples struggling for their emancipation and peace. We are absolutely sure of our victory. We are strong with our entire people and with the growing support of the people of the world, including the U.S. people. We sincerely thank you.
Okay, so what we want to talk about now is a little bit about black radicalism and that tradition today. There's an organization called Black Lives Matter. I think many of you may have heard about it. This organization has been falsely accused by law enforcement elements of being a terrorist organization. That's absolute madness. For the most part, they're young black people who themselves are opposed to police murder of black citizens. And I think many of them are opposed to the police murder of any citizen. So we've seen mass demonstrations throughout the nation led by Black Lives Matter on the ground. Now, last year, I believe it was last year, well, it might have been 2 years ago. I'm sorry, I don't have the exact date. It'll go into it in this information I'm going to share with you. We had a situation where they had a conference in Cleveland where they said, we're no longer a moment, now we're a movement. And a lot of fairly wealthy capitalist organizations gave money to the Black Lives Matter. Now, exactly who in Black Lives, I don't understand their organizational structure, I don't claim to, but where you get your money from does matter in the real world. So, here we go, y'all. We're talking about billionaires that back the Black Lives Matter. The Ford Foundation, one of the most powerful private foundations in the world, with close ties to Wall Street and the U.S. government, recently announced that it is overseeing the funneling of $100 million. I got to say that one more time. It just, you know, kind of make me feel good just hearing that kind of money. Maybe some of it will drip on me. $100 million over 6 years to several organizations that play leading roles in the Black Lives Matter movement. They say, we're eager to deepen and expand this community of social justice funders. The foundation announcement reads, and I quote, we want to nurture bold experiments and help the movement build a solid infrastructure that will enable it to flourish. Let's stop there a minute. So this Ford Foundation, it wants to aid Black Lives Matter and nurture it. I think we have to be critical here and think. Do the 1%, and because certainly Ford Foundation is an organization of the 1%, do they really want to aid the struggle for black liberation? To ask the question is to answer it. I would have to say, something's fishy, baby. Let's continue. Fortune magazine wrote that the foundation's announcement would, quote, make anyone sit up straighter if they read it in a pinch deck. a presentation for startups seeking investor capital. The contribution of such an immense sum of money is a gift from the ruling class that will allow Black Lives Matter to construct a bureaucracy of salaried staff and lobbyist positions. The influx of money will bring the movement greater influence through campaign contributions and integrate it even more closely with the Democratic Party and the corporate media. So now I'm going to say it, all right? What happened to the civil rights movement? I used to, when I was very young, I joined a group called the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. I was about 14 years old. At that time, the youth group itself had 1 million members. Now, what happened? I left that organization in a year. Why? Why would I leave a civil rights organization? Well, the NAACP initially got its funding from its base, its members in the black community. Starting in the 60s, or I think probably the 50s and maybe even before that, they started to take money from corporations. When that occurred, the nature of the organization changed. Can I prove it? I believe so. In 1964, around the time I joined, there was a northern civil rights movement supporting the movement in the South. And I remember all of my little partners and people that I looked to for militant action and to be involved in stuff. And the NAACP was involved on a certain level. We were going to sit in on the World's Fair. That was our tactic. That's what we wanted to do. But I noticed the older members of the NAACP absolutely opposed this. And I didn't understand why. I came to understand with time. It took time. I didn't figure it out immediately. But it became clear that who they were receiving their money from, and some of the older members actually told me this, had something to do with the tactics that they would go along with. They opposed this sit-in at the World's Fair in New York, in Queens, because their funders at that time were opposed to it. Now, how can you be a civil rights organization that fights for the rights of black people but limits itself to what the funders want you to do? Here's an example. Just recently, another example. Ben Chavez, right, was appointed to be the head of the NAACP. They had been sitting around, you know, and they weren't having much effect of the real struggle. Other people were leading the black liberation struggle. The NAACP wasn't really doing that much. So what happened? Here's what happened. Ben Chavez got in there and said, look, we need to get all the black leadership together. Let's say I want to have a summit which includes all black people that are interested in advancing the cause of the fight for black rights, from the Nation of Islam, he said, all the way to Angela Davis. Well, believe it or not, the corporate sponsors of the NAACP opposed this. They did not want this to happen. So what? The NAACP, he's a leader. He can do this, right? Well, this is how things work out in bourgeois politics and capitalist politics. Next thing you read in the paper, Ben Chavez was doing the nasty with the secretary. Now, listen, y'all, they talk every day. You see this stuff about Trump said this and grabbed the boo-boos and did that. Well, that's not good. I mean, for a guy that's going to be president, it's probably not real good that he's going around grabbing people's booty. But is that really the key issue of what we want in our president? Morally, no. I can see that upsets people, and, you know, it's not good. I'm not endorsing Trump. But I'm making a point here about what is his program, because everything that Trump says is not necessarily bad. For instance, he opposes the TPP. He opposed NAFTA. Well, I know as a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, we were out there organizing demonstrations against NAFTA. Now, that was in the 90s. Hillary Clinton was for it. Hillary Clinton was for TPP. And Trump has said at these so-called debates that she said that TPP was the gold standard of international trade. That's what she said. In fact, she denied it on television. I saw her deny it. And then somebody showed me a video where she's speaking and says that it was the gold standard. But that gets lost because everybody talking about who grabbed the boo-boo when the lights went out. Well, that's not good. Keep your eyes on the money and the money on your mind. Don't let nobody distract you and then pick your damn pocket at the same time. So you understand, the NAACP became corrupted, in my opinion, by the fact what led to and increased its corruption was the corporate sponsorship. Now we're looking at Black Lives Matter. The Ford Foundation will also provide various forms of consultancy and advisory assistance to a consortium of 14 groups associated with Black Lives Matter. Both the financing and the auxiliary services are to be organized through a fund called Black-Led Movement Fund, which is being overseen by a firm called Borrell's Philanthropy. So, what we have here, I believe, and you know, you're going to soon find out, is an attempt to strangle Black Lives Matter. What they giving them money, blood? What you talking about? Hold on, bro. Money is not always your friend. In fact, it can cause severe complications, internal fights, and all kind of shit. Money is not always your friend. It depends on where that money is coming from and the purpose of the donor. Think about this, please. We're not condemning Black Lives Matter because Black Lives Matter is really a very federated and loosely organized movement of young people all over the country who are fighting.
And London.
And London. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's popping up in Europe. But young people who are fighting against what they see as racial oppression. That's what Black Lives Matter is at the grassroots level. You also have a burgeoning, misleadership, because that's what's happening if they're taking this money from the Ford Foundation. Ford Foundation ain't giving people money to overthrow capitalism. Come on, man. Come on, we have to be honest at least to ourselves, right? That money is to corrupt, and they already said, to integrate Black Lives Matter into the Democratic Party. Well, guess what? The Democratic Party is the graveyard of social movements. That's what happened to the Civil Rights Movement, to the Black Power Movement, to the Feminist Movement, to the Anti-War Movement. They went in that old raggedy-ass Democratic Party, and that was it. They bought them off, co-opted them, they died. That's what happened. They died. This is an attempt to do the same thing to Black Lives Matter that they did to the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, to the various civil rights organizations, and I might add, even the Black Panther Party. After I departed, it's not about me, but Bobby Seale ran for mayor of the city of Oakland under what banner? Under the Black Panther Party's banner? No. As a Democrat. And that was the end of the Black Panther Party. It started to go downhill after that. Sorry, but the truth will set you free. You have to understand that the 1% doesn't kill every revolutionary with a weapon or the police shooting at you. They much rather control you and politically kill you through other means so that you work against the very cause that you set out to try to accomplish. Let's continue. So, the Ford Foundation receives the bulk of its endowment from the corporate contributors and very wealthy donors through trusts and bequeathments. Established in 1936 by the Ford Motor Company founder Henry Ford, a stone racist. Elson, his son named Elson, today boasts to be the third largest endowment of any foundation, valued at roughly $12.4 billion. You know, I get to shaking when I even say some shit like that. That meant $12.4 billion. And they're going to help the black community. Come on now. The Ford Foundation has for years maintained close ties to the U.S. military and intelligence agencies. We're talking CIA, FBI. The same people that kick your door in and kill your leadership, are they trying to develop our leadership or to kill it through another means? Think about it. A British historian of the Central Intelligence Agency, Frances Stoner Saunders, described the Ford and Rockefeller Foundation in her book, The Cultural Cold War, The CIA and the World of Arts and Letters, as, and listen to this, conscious instruments of covert U.S. policy, with directors and officers who were closely connected to or even members of American intelligence. Today, the foundation is not formally connected to Ford Motor Company, but its board of directors is a who's who of powerful corporate players, including CEOs and Wall Street lawyers. The chairperson of the board of directors is Irene Annoy, widow of deceased Democratic Senator Daniel Annoy. The $100 million gift is an acknowledgement by a powerful section of the ruling class that the aims of the Black Lives Matter movement are aligned with those of Wall Street and the U.S. government. I do not agree with that. I want to suggest that they're trying to, that's a process. I don't agree that the Black Lives Matter people started off looking to derail our movement. But it's a process, and they're trying to get out ahead of them and pull them on into that raggedy-ass Democratic Party. In an interview with Bloomberg News 2015, the Ford Foundation's current president, Darryl Walker, an ex-banker at UBS, spelled out the pro-capitalist perspective underlying the foundation's decision to bankroll the Black Lives Matter. Inequality, and this is a quote from him, inequality in many ways undermines our vision for a more just and fair world, he said. Indeed, the American people, and it's not just the Trump supporters, are feeling increasingly vulnerable, increasingly insecure. And what that does is it drives wedges in our society, in our democracy. Inequality is bad for our democracy. It kills aspirations and dreams and makes us more cynical as a people. What kind of capitalism do we want to have in America? Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Put your hand over your wallet, folks. The foundation's support of Black Lives Matter is an investment in the defense of a profit system. Black Lives Matter portrays the world as divided along racial lines, proclaiming in its website that it, quote, sees itself as a part of a global black family. It claims that black people are, and I quote, extended families and villages that collectively care for one another and especially our children. It explicitly rejects the notion that any other section of society has the right to raise grievances on its own. Its group history page notes, and I quote, not just all lives, black lives. Please do not change the conversation by talking about how your life matters too. Well, we had this in the Bay Area. I was successful, and it's not just me. When we raised the slogan that, yes, indeed, all lives matter, Black Lives Matter militants, you know, attacked me. Say, oh, why you want to say all lives matter? I said, because they do. He said, but that's what the reactionary politicians say. Well, that's true. That's what they say to divert from the struggle. But that you can't get caught up in that and not realize that words have meaning. And that, in fact, what we need today is not black against white in terms of working class people, but class against class, the 99% against the 1%.
I have a few thoughts on that. I feel that the whole Black Lives Matter to me, it's definitely a occupation of just like everyone who has witnessed African American community like go through this struggle. So that's why I always, my heart goes out to Black Lives Matter, because I feel it's different. Like Gerald said, it's not about black against white anymore. It's about the people who have witnessed African American community like go through this struggle.
Okay.
Well, to be honest with you, I'm constantly interacting with these young militants and trying to work with them and support them insofar as I can. But let's not kid ourselves. The petty bourgeois leaders of the Black Lives Matter movement are now poised to exercise a significant degree of political influence directed at securing privileges within the political elite. A quick look at the founders of Black Lives Matter gives a sense of the opportunist self-promotional character of the group as a whole. The official Black Lives Matter organization was founded by three people: Alicia Garza from Bay Area, she was involved in the Oscar Grant work. I'm a member of the Oscar Grant committee, so I remember her. Patrice Coolers and Opal Tomiti. The three met as members of BOLD, Black Organizing for Leadership and Dignity, a nonprofit. BOLD is one of the 14 organizations now being funded by the Black Led Movement Fund. One of these founders, Garza, runs an organization called the National Domestic Workers Alliance, on whose board sits Alter Starr. Starr oversees a fund at the Ford Foundation. She is also on the board of a foundation backed by billionaire George Soros, the Open Society's Foundation's Southern Initiative. Patrice Cullors is the director of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights. That's here in Oakland, too. This organization was founded by Van Jones, a Democrat who worked under Obama as a special advisor on green jobs, enterprise, and innovation. He is also a longtime contributor to CNN. This organization also receives funds from the Open Society Foundation. A leaked document from an October 2015 board meeting of the Soros-funded U.S. programs Open Society revealed that the organization provides $650,000, quote, to invest in technical assistance and support for the groups at the core of the burgeoning hashtag Black Lives Matter movement. The document notes that the board planned to discuss the difficulty of dealing with a, quote, decentralized movement. That's what Black Lives Matter really is now. So what do they want? They want a bureaucracy to control the whole movement. It's not yet done, but that's where that money, that's where it's taken us here. So we have to be aware of this. The document notes that the board planned to discuss the difficulty of dealing with this decentralized movement, as I just said. What happens when you want to throw a lot of money at a movement, but there isn't any place for it to go? It was also raised that Soros' name could discredit Black Lives Matter if the public became aware of his financial support. Many of the organizations of the list of Ford recipients are also members of the newly formed Movement for Black Lives, which has published a policy agenda document centered on demands for greater governmental financing of black-owned businesses and institutions. In an earlier period, nationalist movements such as the Black Panthers, however politically disoriented, had a genuine element of social struggle and conflict with the state. While their political program was somewhat undeveloped, they had a significant base of support among the oppressed people themselves. This was the period of mass civil rights movement against Jim Crow segregation in the South and the urban rebellions in the North. In response to the upheavals of the late 60s, a section of the ruling class sought to cultivate a base of support among the more privileged sections of minorities that would be loyal to the status quo as a result of policies such as affirmative action. Social inequality among African Americans has soared, with the small elite holding positions of power in corporate America and the state. This found its apotheosis in the election of Barack Obama to preside as president over a historic transfer of wealth to the financial aristocracy following the Wall Street crash of 2008. These social transformations are reflected in the political outlook of the Black Lives Matter movement, which is devoid of any genuine element of social protest or democratic struggle. The agenda of these organizations is underscored by the support of groups like the Ford Foundation and has nothing to do with the real social and economic grievances of millions of workers and young people of any race or authenticity. They speak for highly privileged sections of the middle class who are fighting over the distribution of wealth within the top 10% of the population. In the face of rising popular opposition to the various wars that the United States is involved in, police violence and social inequality, the decision to advance the limited program, racialist program of Black Lives Matter is aimed at dividing the working class and preventing the emergence of an independent and unified working class movement against the capitalist system. That's all for now.
I see.
So now we're going to move on. We're going to start talking about what do we call this? The urban
planting justice.
Planting justice. Rinaldi, take it away.
Hey everyone, happy Sunday. This rain is great. So a few years ago, this new social justice organization by the name of Planting Justice was started. Just recently, it was nominated one of the best social justice groups to start here in Oakland. By the East Bay Express. A little bit about them. They're an organization that aims to help build jobs for ex-prisoners through agriculture and green sciences. They leased out this humongous land, acres and acres, in the Richmond. And they leased it for 99 years. And right now they've created this beautiful garden. They have about 24 workers who are ex-prisoners from state federal prisons and state prisons, and 0% have gone back to jail. So this is a program that I'm really excited about, and I'm thinking of like getting involved in. And you will be hearing more about them through us. If you're interested, go to plantingjustice.org, and it's based here in the East Bay, and you can volunteer also. If you're into gardening, you can totally jump into that and, you know, spend a weekend with some friends there helping out the land. With some awesome people. So moving on, since we're talking about agriculture, prop.
Yeah, tell me, here's something about agriculture. We want to talk about a proposition. What's the number of the proposition? 64. Proposition 64 will legalize marijuana. Please, if you don't do nothing else in life, make sure you go and vote yes on Proposition 64 for no other reason. You don't have to smoke and hide, right? So, right now, we're going to play that song. Oh, he didn't turn. Yeah, here we go.
Thank you. criticizing. Legalize it, yeah, yeah, and I will advertise it. Some call it call it ganja. Never mind, got to legalize it. And don't criticize it. Legalize it, yeah, yeah. And I will advertise. Players of instrument too. Legalize it, yeah, yeah. That's the best thing you can do. Don't criticize it. Legalize it, yeah, yeah, and I will advertise it. It's good for the food. Good for asthma. Tuberculosis, even pneumothrombosis. Got to legalize it. Don't criticize it. Legalize it, yeah. I will advertise it. Birds eat it. Ants love it. Fowls eat it. Goats love to play. Legalize it. And don't criticize it. Legalize it, yeah, yeah. And I will advertise it. Keep on telling them legalize.
Yes, sir. We want to legalize it because you may not know this, but every 25 seconds an American citizen is arrested for the possession of drugs. Actually, drug use is a victimless crime, really. And people should not have to go to jail simply because they use drugs. If they abuse those drugs, that's a medical problem. And people should be treated as someone that needs assistance, not jailed as criminals. All right? So legalize it. Vote yes.
Vote yes. And also...
Proposition 64.
Prop 64. help everyone get involved. Help the cannabis clubs get involved. You know, them paying their taxes helps benefit a lot of other things for us, too. So it's like, you know, let's make this legal.
That's right. Also, there's another proposition I want people to pay attention to, and that is Proposition 62. Please vote yes on 62 to ban the death penalty, and please vote no on Proposition 66, which is set up to speed up the death penalty. Please, but whatever you do, make sure you vote.
All right, everyone, this is Eric. I've not got a lot to say this week, but I want to revisit our continuing coverage of ecological resistance, particularly in North Dakota, resistance to the Dakota Access Pipeline, which is being built through indigenous native land. So I got to hear a report back from an ISO member who's spent some time there. In the last few weeks, that was on Thursday evening, and she talked a lot about the sort of plurality of resistance that's happening there, that folks of all different racial, ethnic, and class backgrounds have gotten behind this pipeline resistance. And however, the pipeline is continuing. There are... new construction sites popping up all over the proposed route. And at many of those places, including in Iowa, there are people meeting it with resistance, lockdowns, things like that. What I want to highlight today is some gross violations of press freedom that have taken place around this pipeline action. Now, many of you, we reported about a month ago on a particularly climactic point in the resistance struggle in which security officials from the Pipeline Corporation came and set dogs on protesters, driving them away. This is coverage that was brought to us by Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman. And Amy Goodman, in the time since, had a warrant issued for her arrest and for trespassing and conspiracy to conspiracy to interfere with a public service, something to that effect. Now this is language that's being used around many of the charges that are being brought against the water protectors of various tribes and their supporters, conspiracy to destroy property, right? Conspiracy to theft, conspiracy to interfere with public service. Now think about for a second what it means to be charged with conspiracy to do something. How much evidence is necessary for the state to insist that you're engaged in some form of conspiracy? It's a very loose concept that the corporations and the state is using to trump up charges against these water protectors. I also want to highlight a filmmaker named Dea Schlossberg, who's been working on an ecological defense documentary, and is, as part of her project, has done a lot of coverage of the Keystone XL resistance as well as the resistance to the Dakota Access Pipeline. Now, she was arrested while filming an oil pipeline protest this last Tuesday, and she's being charged with three felony conspiracies.
She's looking up to 45 years in prison.
She is facing up to 45 years in prison as a result of these conspiracy charges. She's been working on a film called How to Let Go of the World and Love All Things Climate Can't Change. So two of her fellow protesters, Michael Foster and Samuel Jessup, are being charged. Schlossberg's equipment and footage from the event have been confiscated. Schlossberg said shortly after being released on bond that she can't comment on her arrest until she spoke to a lawyer. The three conspiracy felony charges are as follows: conspiracy to theft of property, conspiracy to theft of services, and conspiracy to tampering with or damaging a public service. As Rinaldi was just saying, these carry a possible maximum prison sentence of 45 years. Josh Fox, the director of the film, two other films related to fossil fuels, including the Academy Award-nominated Gaslands, said Schlossberg wasn't participating in the protest herself, but acting as a filmmaker to document the event. Her arrest appears to reflect a deliberate targeting of reporters that has continued throughout this action. Quote, this is a quote from the director, "They have, in my view, violated the First Amendment," referring to the Pembia County Sheriff Department's "It's effing scary. It knocks the wind out of your sails. It throws you for a loop. They threw the book at Dea for being a journalist." People are free to come and protest. So this is Ryan Bayales, the state's attorney for this county, told the Huffington Post that there was no such targeting of reporters, that the event at the pipeline was not a protest but a criminal action. See how they're changing the language, right? So that folks can basically dragging the First Amendment out from under these folks by insisting that they're not engaged in collective direct action, but they're actually engaged in criminal activity.
Eric, can you talk about a little bit about what the land where the pipeline's being crossed belongs to? There's a lot of Native American land there.
Yes.
And that's one of the biggest reasons why they don't want filming, because they don't want to be incriminated.
So, you want to say more about that? As I understand it, it isn't the tribe that's opposed to these journalists, but the state, because the state is not interested. The state is sort of radically opposed to word getting out. But there is, when it comes to direct action in general, there are lots of reasons why folks oftentimes don't want to be filmed.
Every time a Native American land is being taken over again, a lot of civil injustice happens, and you know the state does not want filmmakers there filming this. They don't want people reporting this.
Why not? Can you maybe say, if you want, a little bit about, like, why press freedom is important and why, like, getting these stories out is important, why the state might want to stand in the way?
One of the reasons why the state wants to stay in the way is to, make sure that it all flows through smoothly. And, again, you know, it's like this pipeline is being built over some Native American land. And, Native Americans already are struggling a lot and having to lose a lot. We keep promising them, you know, that they're going to be okay, give them money, shine them up. You know, what Jared was talking about earlier about, you know, big corporations coming, handing you money. You know, secretly they're like, you know, they're like pickpocketing you, like taking, you know, like snatching from you. That's exactly what's happening here. And that's like one of the main reasons why we should, like, you know, talk more about this and get more involved, write some letters in support to those states, Senates and
certainly this is an ongoing struggle. The protesters, we call them water protectors, right? We call them water protectors because this pipeline is slated to, a lot of this struggle has been around the Dakota Access Corporation's ability to bore under a lake on indigenous land, a lake that feeds into the Mississippi River, provides water and irrigation to millions and millions of people, beyond the scope of just the tribe, right? This tribe is interested in protecting water. Like, water is life for everyone. And so it's important that these stories get out, and these journalists who are butting up against the state are facing a tactic of repression that's been generalized throughout the course of this struggle, right? People have, indigenous folks all around this encampment have been picked up randomly and relatively indiscriminately and charged with conspiracy, with these series of conspiracy charges, right? Conspiracy to interfere with the public service, conspiracy to do this and that. These are scare tactics, right? They're not only scare tactics, but tactics for incarcerating people and materially repressing them.
And it's a clear violation of the First Amendment. That's what this thing's all about. And this filmmaker that is making a movie about, you know, how change happens through climate, you know, tells the story. So for her to be getting 45 years for, you know, for just filming and her exercising her First Amendment right is wrong.
And the people's right to know.
Exactly. When these reporters are locked up, right, it's they often who suffer the most, but it is also the information doesn't get out, right? This filmmaker had her equipment stolen, had her footage taken by the state, right? Now keep an eye out this week. Amy Goodman sort of reported on the very climactic incident when the security forces set dogs against these protesters and harmed a lot of people, right? Amy Goodman had blasted video and audio reports, and so again issued a warrant for conspiracy trespassing, right? And Amy Goodman is going back to North Dakota tomorrow to turn herself in, right? To put eyes on this spectacle of state repression, right? To call attention to the ongoing sort of information blackout that the state is engaged in. So that's taking place tomorrow. Also, keep an eye on Daya's case as it develops. Daya Schlossberg, she is out on bail currently, but is facing these three felony conspiracy counts. Anything else, Rinaldi?
One thing, I think we should, like, organize something, like you, me, and Eric, and some other, like, other guys, on, like, kind of a small little rally to, you know, make this public. Because this pipeline thing is, like, important to me. Because it's land that belongs to Native Americans. You know, they've been through enough. And, you know, for the fact that there's artists being silenced, and, you know, there's, like, criminal charges being put on them just for exercising the First Amendment. You know, it's something I think we should all talk about.
Yeah, I agree. And so we will continue to follow up on this story and bring you updates. That's one of the things that we're committed to here and keep an eye out for local solidarity actions, for local report backs. Lots of folks are going to North Dakota from the Bay, coming back, interested in talking about their experience. Keep an eye out for that. In more ecological news, the Great Barrier Reef, the largest and oldest sort of living ecosystem in the world, was declared dead this week by scientists after 25 million years of existence. So scientist Rowan Jacobson wrote the following obituary for the Great Barrier Reef. For most of its life, The reef was the world's largest living structure, the only one visible from space. It was 1,400 miles long, made up of 2,900 individual reefs and 1,050 islands. In total area, it was larger than the United Kingdom, and it combined more biodiversity than all of Europe combined. It harbored 1,625 species of fish, 3,000 species of mollusks, 450 species of coral, 220 species of birds, and 30 species of whales and dolphins. Among its many other achievements, the reef was home to one of the world's largest populations of dugong and the largest breeding ground of green turtles. The fate of this wonder of the world should sober us up and clear our heads. No one knows if a serious effect at this time could have saved the reef, but it is clear that no such effort was made. So keep an eye. This is a story that broke just on Thursday, and who is it that benefits from the systematic colonization and ravaging of the environment?
And that's why that back to the pipeline. The Great Barrier Reef, dude, that sucks. My imagination grew up like just being invented on this stuff. Like it's, you know, the mystery, like the imagination that this beautiful landmark you should like just create, you know, and literally now it's only going to exist in imagination, which is really sad. And this is why I think the pipeline should be, you know, really stopped, because that water that flows into the Mississippi, that water nourishes so much, you know, open land.
Yes, it does.
So many swamps, you know, so many greenlands, like, you know, the same, it's going to happen again, man.
Yeah, the world is dying, and these corporations are benefiting from it over and over and over again. So this song goes out to our friends at Standing Rock and all people across the world who are resisting the systematic devastation of our natural environment.
Multinational corporations dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Ha, 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 ha. Say goodbye to plastic and goodbye to cars. No more convenience stores. Hello to stars. No more Wall Street and no more Pentagon. Thinking about these things makes me happy. We're dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Ha, 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 ha. Goodbye to polystyrene. We'll bend to the waist. There is no time for debating. We have to make haste. If we're going to survive without computer program minds, we're going to have to can pop culture. And say hello to campfires and stomping bare feet. And naked amoebas hungry to eat. Hello to primal consciousness and love for the land. Now that coyotes are running the country. We're dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Ha, 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 ha. Sayonara to suburbia and well-manicured lawns. Bye-bye Barbie and Ken doll bonds. No more developers or slime ball execs. Your condos are on fire. We're dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Ha, 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 ha. No more Christian country. when the skyscrapers cut down. Yes, we are coming for your children. Oh, we're dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Dancing on the ruins of multinational corporations. Ha, ha,
now, I want to share with y'all a little experience and something I learned in Berkeley Friday night. I went to a church where there was a meeting of South Korean immigrants. Normally speaking, to be honest with you, I, you know, being prejudiced, not knowing any better, I assume that people from South Korea are simply reactionary supporters of American imperialism. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. Not, you never can look at a whole group, in this case, South Korean immigrants, and assume that they all share a single opinion. This group was organized in opposition to U.S. militarism in South Korea. No to U.S. missile defense in Korea is their mantra. On July 7, 2000, 2016, the U.S. and South Korean governments announced a joint decision to deploy the U.S. Terminal High Altitude Area Defense, THAAD. Terminal High Altitude Area Defense missile system in South Korea. The two governments assert, without serious evidence and contrary to expert opinion, that the THAAD system, this missile defense system, will protect South Korea from the threat of North Korean missiles. For example, the U.S. Congressional Research Service finds that THAAD is unlikely to shed any aid or shield South Korea, since it is designed to counter high-altitude missiles, not those that North Korea would be likely to use against South Korean targets. Moreover, now understand, that's an American agency that points out that this particular technology is not useful for South Korea. Moreover, the decision to deploy THAAD in South Korea and to continue with last summer's U.S.-South Korea war games occurred in spite of offers by North Korea to freeze its nuclear weapons programs if Washington and Seoul would stop the war games. So what our government is telling us is that those crazy North Koreans just won't listen. But we don't hear anything about North Korea trying to negotiate and willing to freeze their nuclear development if the United States stops the war games with the South Korean military. Think about that a minute. That's not much of a exchange. They stop the nuclear testing. The United States stops the provocations against North Korea. Well, Washington, if Washington and Seoul, you know, would stop these so-called war games, these provocative war games, I think that would be a good thing. North Korea has since continued testing its ballistic missiles because the United States refused to negotiate. It conducted its fifth nuclear explosion, September 9, 2016. And continues to pursue its goal of fitting a nuclear warhead on the top of an ICBM missile, intercontinental ballistic missile. The U.S. THAAD deployment in South Korea is part of the U.S., what they call their pivot to the Asian Pacific. It expands the already significant network of U.S., quote, missile defense systems, unquote, encircling China and Russia. That's what they're up to. These systems give the United States a significant, although fleeting, military advantage in any future confrontation, since they give the United States military the potential to neutralize an opponent's ability to retaliate. The expansion of this network appears to reflect a broader U.S. decision to change its military posture from one of deterrence of nuclear war to that of first strike. Madness. The determination of the U.S. government to use an expanding regional military presence to boost its regional political influence comes at a high cost. For example, this strategy intensifies regional military tensions, fuels a new arms race, and increases the possibility of a new war on the Korean Peninsula. In doing so, it also undermines the national sovereignty and democratic aspirations of people in other countries. In this instance, those in South Korea. A growing number of South Koreans are fighting to block the deployment of the THAAD system in their country. So we hear all about the iPhone, the next iPhone number 7, but we heard nothing about this very vital issue. They correctly fear, and that is, I'm talking about the South Koreans, correctly fear that its deployment will draw their country into an anti-Chinese alliance with the United States and Japan, embolden militaristic anti-democratic political forces in their own country, and exacerbate tensions between North and South Korea. They also worry about the negative health effects that appear associated with the operation of the THAAD radar system. Also of concern is the cost of the THAAD system, estimated at $1.3 billion. This is something they can't even use. It doesn't even work. $1.3 billion, plus an additional $22 million each year for the operating and sustainment of this system. And this will be borne by the South Koreans and U.S. taxpayers. Very little is known in the United States about THAAD and the opposition of South Koreans to its deployment in their country, and of recent diplomatic overtures by North Korea to reduce tensions on the peninsula. Yet its deployment should also be of concern to people in the United States. We also will suffer if our country again goes to war. And even if the worst is avoided, the continuing development of new and more destructive weapon systems draws precious resources away from the needed domestic social programs. After decades of disastrous military engagements abroad, look at the Middle East. We need a new approach. We urge the United States government to move away from the policies that escalate military tension and redraw the old Cold War era lines in favor of policies that seek to resolve conflicts peacefully through diplomacy and dialogue. Towards that end, we urge the U.S. government to rescind its decision on THAAD deployment in South Korea and to pursue all possible avenues for reducing tensions on the Korean Peninsula by re-engaging in diplomacy with North Korea. This was shared with me by the Task Force to Stop THAAD in Korea and Militarism in Asia and the Pacific. Well, you guys ready?
All right, one more bit of news. We talked a lot about Black Lives Matter today on the show, and so I wanted to give a shout out to folks in Stockton. So we've got folks in Stockton held an action this Wednesday. that was relatively successful, but faced some pretty violent resistance from the state. Black Lives Matter protesters have routinely blocked some of Stockton's busiest streets, and they were met with a much different police response Wednesday evening. This is their first demonstration since a woman and her teenage daughter were allegedly attacked during a march last month. So on Wednesday, dozens of officers dressed in riot gear formed skirmish lines, brandished batons to prevent the protesters from marching in the street near Weberston Mall. Several people were arrested. At least three were forcibly taken to the ground when demonstrators clashed with officers at West March Lane and Claremont Avenue in Stockton. This is a quote from Aaron Paradiso, one of Stockton Police Department's most vocal critics. He says, "We knew they were training, and I knew they'd be out here in riot gear. Sometimes this kind of thing happens when you're out here fighting for your rights. You have to be willing to be arrested." The demonstration started at nearby Weberson Park with a peaceful birthday celebration for Colby Friday, 30 years old, who was fatally shot by Stockton police officer David Wells on August 16th behind Jamestown Plaza Shopping Center. Organizers of the event served roasted pig and cupcakes. Family members demanded any video available of the shooting and its aftermath. Police recently acknowledged that Wells did not activate his department-issued body camera until after the shooting occurred, outraging some who do not believe the department's assertion that Friday was shot when he attempted to pick up the gun he dropped during a foot pursuit. So shortly before 6 p.m. Wednesday, dozens of people who had gathered at the park started marching north in the middle of Kentfield Road. They waved signs, shouted slogans, and almost immediately began to obstruct traffic in the area. As they reached East March Lane and continued east toward the mall, they encountered dozens of officers wielding batons, wearing helmets with face shields. Some of the demonstrators ventured into the intersection, but police quickly advanced on them, shouting at them to move. The protesters continued east and appeared to be headed toward one of their usual stops in front of the mall at Pacific Avenue. Police cut them off and ended up arresting seven protesters. So keep your ear to the ground for these folks. Make sure that we know when the police are out there further victimizing communities and putting down these protests. So we're going to thank you for listening today. We're going to wrap things up in these last few minutes with a series of announcements. So at the beginning of the show, you heard Cole from the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee tell us about his political history, tell us about the ongoing prisoner work strike nationwide and the ongoing hunger strike in Merced. Please continue paying attention to Live Free Merced as folks in Merced County Jail and John LaDaraca facility enter their second week of their renewed hunger strike. For further information on that, besides looking at Live Free Merced, you can hit up IWOC, hit up the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee. You can write them at P.O. Box 6305 here in Oakland, zip code 94612. You can email them at iwoc-oakland@iwoc.org. And you can give them a ring at 510-368-3426. Find them online at iwoc.noblogs.org. Furthermore, our group, the Ghost Town Prisoner Support, is hosting our bi-weekly letter writing event this coming Thursday at about 7:30 in West Oakland. You can get more information by liking and following our Facebook group, Ghost Town Prisoner Support, or emailing us at ghosttownprisonersupport@riseup.net.
I had one small thing I wanted to share. It's election. You know what? Not everyone's going to be voting this year, but I think everyone should at least vote for like the propositions for your state. If you're not going to vote for the president, that's fine. But please vote no against Prop 66. Do not let the state send people who haven't even received justice yet, who haven't even been given time to prove that they're innocent, straight to death row. Don't help kill innocent people. There's a lot of people throughout the country who are on death row and waiting trial still. And so vote no on Prop 66. Let's give these prisoners time and the justice that they deserve.
You're listening to Berkeley Liberation Radio, 104.1 FM on your dial. And also, you can listen to our program every Sunday from 12 to 2 by going to the internet and dialing in to Berkeley Liberation Radio and listening to us online. We're going to go out now with
there's a new world coming, and it's just around the bend. There's a new world coming. This one's coming to an end. There's a new voice calling, and you can hear it if you try. And it's growing stronger with every day that passes by. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a brand new morning rising clear and sweet and free. There's a new day dawning that belongs to you and me. Yes, a new world's coming. You know the one I'm talking about, the one we've had visions of, and it's coming in peace, coming in joy, coming in peace, coming in joy, coming in peace, coming in joy, coming in love. And I saw another sign in heaven, great and marvelous, seven angels having the seven last plagues, for in them is filled up the wrath of God. And I saw, as it were, a sea of glass mingled with fire, and them that have gotten the victory over the beast, and over his image, and over his mark, and over the number of his name, stand on the sea of glass, having the harps of God. There's a new world coming. This one's coming to an end. There's a new voice calling, and you could hear it if you would just give it a try. And it's growing strong.